Turns out there was gold in them thar hills. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. There is news today about which country will end this year as the top producer of petroleum. It's the statistic that is altering both the oil market and geopolitics. The BBC's Russell Padmore is here with the International Energy Agency numbers. Good morning, Russell.
Morning to you, David.
All right, drum roll, please. By the end of this year, which country is slated to be the top oil producer on the planet?
Well, I suppose we've got to own up, fess up to say that it's going to be the United States outstripping Saudi Arabia for the first time since the early 1990s, David. Technology has changed and U.S. production of liquid petroleum is now booming. And that's why the U.S. within a month or two is going to overtake Saudi Arabia.
Now, this, of course, has implications for what some see as America's energy independence, not relying as much on the often unstable Middle East. But what might this mean for the crude oil market in general, the fact that the U.S. is producing the way it is now?
You would think at the moment, David, with the way the geopolitics are playing out in the world, traditionally in the past when we had problems in the Middle East, that that would affect the price of oil. But oil is actually falling in price. And if you look at it from an American perspective, U.S. production in August was about 9 million barrels a day, Russia 9.7, Saudi Arabia 10.1. So just in crude oil alone, America's still playing a little bit of a catch-up.
The BBC's Russell Padmore in London. Thank you very much.
David, thanks.
While the U.S. is about to become fossil fuel king, others would want to honor countries for their efforts in renewable energy. Denmark, Iceland, and Germany would get some of the honors there. Tomorrow, 1st of October, 1 year since the rollout of healthcare.gov, and the texture of healthcare in America is changing. For instance, there's been disruption in the old pattern of healthcare providers sending bills and the insurance companies paying their portion. Now, some insurers are tying what they pay to how well the doctors, hospitals, and labs are doing their job. From the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY, Dan Gorenstein reports.
Here's the problem when doctors are paid for every single office visit, test, or procedure. What's called fee-for-service.
We've realized over time that that's gotten us exactly what we've paid for, which is a lot of extra care and expensive care.
Suzanne DelBanco heads up Catalyst for Payment Reform, which monitors payment trends. DelBanco's new report shows a 29% spike over last year in insurers who are either ditching or tweaking fee-for-service. The value of these alternatives, which go by awful names like capitation and shared risk plans, is debatable. What's not is the trouble with fee-for-service, says Harvard's Meredith Rosenthal.
It's much clearer to think about payment reform as removing the taint of fee-for-service.
Rosenthal says the public must understand fee-for-service can be more than wasteful. It can be harmful. When another MRI leads to another procedure, which lands a person in the hospital, a hospitalization that could have been avoided in the first place. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
Call it social and environmental investing. Call it impact investing. Applying our personal values to our portfolios is not a new idea. One big example from the 1980s when college students in the U.S. forced their universities to sell their stakes in companies that did business with apartheid South Africa. But now a bunch of countries has come together and is recommending that governments help impact investing become an even more powerful force for making the world a better place. Matthew Bishop, U.S. business editor at The Economist magazine, acted as this group's official scribe and more. Matthew, good to see you.
Good morning.
Matthew, market forces are the invisible hand, Mr. Smith says. Impact investing is the, what do you call it, invisible heart?
Mm-hmm.
How so?
Well, there's this whole new movement which is called impact investing, which is about trying to make money and do good at the same time. And I've been part of a G8 task force with people from all around the world working on how do we get this impact investment market to be the driving force of the capital market so that we actually can say all that money that we're investing, our savings and so forth, is actually making the world a better place.
Now, I remember writing about this in a chapter of my book about 15 years ago, and there are certainly proponents, people very excited by what you're now calling impact investing, but there are many people saying you sacrifice return. We have a fiduciary responsibility. If you want to do good with your money, let us make the money for you, and then you can do what you want with the profits. That thinking is now – sounds like it's really shifted.
Yeah. So one of the things that we did with the report was get a whole bunch of lawyers to look at this notion of fiduciary responsibility. People are being way too cautious. You can create all sorts of financial products that have all sorts of risk, return, and impact profile. And some will be a trade-off where you'll say, I'm going to take a little less return for a little more impact. Others, though, we think things like Tesla cars, for example, that's been invested in by impact investors. And that's one of the most successful stocks on the market.
So what's the next step with after a report like this? I mean, who do you think would find it the most useful reading this?
Well, this report is written for policymakers because there are a number of policy changes or clarifications that are needed. It's also for entrepreneurs, but it's also for regular savers. We think that one of the things that is about to happen is there'll be a whole load of new financial products that are available. People can invest in their 401k plans and so forth that are going to cater to their values and say, look, you want this kind of world. We will deliver you a portfolio that helps you get there.
Matthew Bishop, U.S. Business Editor at The Economist. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Ang Lee's Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon won the Oscar nearly 15 years ago now. Next summer, the sequel will be released using an innovative production and distribution method. It'll be on Netflix next August and at the same time in giant screen IMAX theaters and nowhere else. Netflix will have paid the Weinstein Company a lot of money for this, but the terms were not disclosed. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.